Unit 4, the Middle West. The Middle West is a large region. It stretches across the middle of the United States. The land there is mostly flat or rolling. In the Middle West is one of the world's most important farming areas, the interior plains. Yet the Middle West has many large cities, too. The Middle West is also at the center of the nation's transportation system. Busy highways and railways crisscross much of the region. Mighty rivers flow across the land. The major rivers are the Mississippi, the Ohio, and the Missouri. These rivers and the Great Lakes help connect many places in the United States. Unit themes: commonality and diversity, continuity and change, individualism and interdependence, interaction within different environments. Unit project: draw a mural. Complete this project as you study Unit 4. Work in a small group to plan a mural that shows scenes from the Middle West. On a sheet of paper, list places and activities that you think should be shown in the mural. Then use your textbook, books from the library, and the internet to find out more about those places and activities. Take notes about them and draw simple sketches to go with your notes. Unit 4 Preview, the Middle West. Set the scene with literature.
Heartland by Diane Siebert. Paintings by Wendell Miner. The Midwest, Middle America. These are two other names that people often use for the Middle West. Because it is in the very heart of the country, the Middle West region has still another name. It is sometimes called the Heartland of America. Read now from a poem that tells about America's heartland. I am the heartland, great and wide. I sing of hope. I sing of pride. I am the land where wheat fields grow in golden waves that ebb and flow, where cornfields stretched across the plains lie green between the country lanes. I am the heartland, shaped and lined by rivers great and small that wind past farms whose barns and silos stand like treasures in my fertile hand. I am the heartland. I can feel machines of iron, tools of steel, creating farmland square by square, a quilt of life I proudly wear, a patchwork quilt laid gently down in hues of yellow, green, and brown as tractors, plows, and planters go across my fields and row by row prepare the earth and plant the seeds that grow to meet a nation's needs. A patchwork quilt whose seams are etched by miles of wood and wire, stretched around the barns and pastures where the smell of livestock fills the air. These are the farms where hogs are bred, the farms where chicks are hatched and fed, the farms where dairy cows are raised, the farms where cattle herds are grazed, the farms with horses, farms with sheep. Upon myself, all these I keep. I am the heartland. On this soil live those who through the seasons toil. The farmer with his spirit strong, the farmer working hard and long, the feed and seed store cap in place, pulled down to shield a weathered face. A face whose every crease and line can tell a tale and help define a lifetime spent beneath the sun, a life of work that's never done. I am the heartland. On these plains rise elevators filled with grains. They mark the towns where people walk to see their neighbors, just to talk. where farmers go to get supplies and sit a spell to analyze the going price of corn and beans, the rising cost of new machines, where steps are meant for shelling peas, and kids build houses in the trees. I am the heartland. In my song are cities beating steady strong, with footsteps from a million feet and sounds of traffic in the street, where giant mills and stockyards sprawl and neon-lighted shadows fall from windowed walls of brick that rise toward the clouds to scrape the skies, where highways meet and rails converge, where farm and city rhythms merge to form a vital bond between the concrete and the fields of green.
The heartland is an important farming area, but most people live in cities. There they do many kinds of jobs. Many work in transportation industries. They help move goods on the heartland's railroads, highways, and waterways. Others work in factories. Most people, however, have service jobs, just like the people who live in other regions of the United States. Chapter 8, The Interior Plains. We come and go, but the land is always here, and the people who love it and understand it are the people who own it for a little while. From the book Old Pioneers by Willa Cather, 1913. Lesson 1. Focus. How does climate affect farming? Main idea. Read to find out how different amounts of precipitation affect the kinds of crops grown on the interior plains. Vocabulary. Prairie, drought, blizzard, hailstorm, tornado. Farming on the plains. The interior plains stretch across most of the Middle West region, which includes both the Great Lakes states and the Plains states. The fertile, rolling land in those states helps make the Middle West a good place for farming. Farmers in different parts of the Middle West, however, grow different kinds of crops. Two plains regions. Because the interior plains cover such a large area, they are often divided into two smaller regions. The eastern region is called the Central Plains. The western region is called the Great Plains. The Central Plains begin in Ohio and end west of the Mississippi River. The Great Plains stretch from there to the Rocky Mountains. Look at the map on page 272. The main difference between the Central Plains and the Great Plains is the amount of precipitation that the regions receive. Most places on the Central Plains usually receive from 20 to 40 inches, 51 to 102 centimeters, of precipitation each year. The Great Plains are much drier. Most places there receive less than 20 inches, 51 centimeters, of precipitation each year. Long ago, banks sometimes refused to loan money to farmers who lived on the Great Plains. Bankers feared that the dry climate would make it impossible for farmers to grow enough crops to earn a living and pay back their loans. Before pioneers plowed the land, much of the interior plains was a prairie. A prairie is an area of flat or rolling land covered mostly by grasses and wildflowers. On the Great Plains, prairie grasses grew short and stubby. Because the Central Plains get more precipitation, the prairie grasses there grew tall and thick. The first pioneers to see this tall grass prairie described it as a sea of grass. In some places, the grasses rose above the heads of the pioneers. Those grasses helped make the soil very dark and fertile. The roots of the grasses reached deep into the ground. When the grasses died, they rotted and left behind matter that enriched the soil. Today, most of the tall grass prairie is gone. In its place are cities and farms. Yet the dark, fertile soil remains. In some areas, the soil is so dark that it appears black. Farms in the Central Plains get plenty of rain and have warm summer temperatures. These things help make the Central Plains a leading farming area. Review. What is the main difference between the Central Plains and the Great Plains? Corn and the Central Plains. Farmers on the Central Plains grow many crops, such as wheat, soybeans, and oats. Corn, however, is the leading crop in most years. The rich soil and warm, humid summers are ideal for growing corn. About 3/4 of all the corn grown in the United States is from the Central Plains. In fact, nearly 1/3 of all the corn grown in the world is raised there. Iowa, Illinois, and Nebraska are the three leading corn-producing states. Some of the corn grown on the Central Plains is sweet corn. This is the kind that people can eat right off the cob. Most of the corn, though, is dent corn. It makes good feed for livestock. Livestock raised on the Central Plains includes cattle, hogs, and chickens. To the north, where the climate is cooler, the grasslands are especially good for raising dairy cattle. Wisconsin and Minnesota are both important dairy states. About half of all the dent corn raised on the Central Plains is fed to livestock. Farmers often can make more money by feeding the corn to livestock and then selling the livestock than they can by selling the corn directly. Large amounts of corn are also used in other ways. Corn is an important part of such foods as breakfast cereals, margarine, and syrup. Corn is also used to make building materials, paints, fuels, and paper goods. Review. Why is corn important to the Central Plains? Wheat and the Great Plains. Corn does not grow as well on the Great Plains. It needs from 18 to 25 inches, 46 to 64 centimeters of rain during the growing season. Most parts of the Great Plains receive less rain than that during the whole year. In some years, there is enough rain for growing corn, but in other years, there are droughts. A drought is a time of little or no rain. During a drought, crops often die. A drought can last for months or even years. Because most parts of the Great Plains are dry, few trees grow there. In the past, only short prairie grasses covered the ground. Today, miles of wheat fields cover the region. North Dakota and Kansas are the leading wheat-producing states. Wheat can grow in less fertile soil than corn can. It also needs less water than corn does, so wheat grows well in the drier climate of the Great Plains. As wheat becomes ripe, it turns amber or golden in color. Just before the harvest, the wheat fields are a beautiful sight. For as far as the eye can see, wheat sways in the wind. The song, America the Beautiful, describes this sight. Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain. Most of the wheat grown on the Great Plains is used to make flour. That is why the Great Plains is sometimes called the nation's breadbasket. Another kind of wheat, called durum wheat, is also grown on the northern Great Plains. It is used to make pasta products, such as spaghetti and macaroni. Review. Why is more wheat than corn grown on the Great Plains? Danger on the plains. Farmers on the interior plains must watch the weather closely. A whole year's crop can be wiped out by a single storm. Livestock can be hurt or killed. The flat, treeless land of the Great Plains offers little protection from strong winds. In the winter, howling winds from the north sometimes cause blizzards. A blizzard is a snowstorm driven by strong, freezing winds. Another frozen danger comes in the form of hailstorms. A hailstorm drops hail, or lumps of ice, that can damage or destroy crops. Students all over the United States have fire drills at school. On the interior plains, students also have tornado drills. A tornado is a funnel-shaped spinning windstorm. Tornadoes are sometimes called cyclones or twisters. Tornadoes are the Earth's strongest winds. At the center of a tornado, the wind can blow at more than 200 miles, 322 kilometers per hour. Some tornadoes have been known to reach speeds of 500 miles, 805 kilometers per hour. Most tornadoes last for less than an hour, but they can do terrible damage. Review. Why can storms be especially bad for farmers? Lesson 1 review. Check understanding. 1. Remember the facts. Why does corn grow well on the Central Plains? 2. Recall the main idea. How do different amounts of precipitation affect the kinds of crops grown on the interior plains? Think critically. 3. Link to you. How might a drought on the interior plains affect you and your family? Show what you know, writing activity. Suppose you have been visiting farms on both the Central Plains and the Great Plains. Farmers on the Great Plains want to know how their farms are different from farms on the Central Plains. Write them a letter describing some of the differences you have seen during your visits. Compare your letter to the letters written by classmates. Chart and graph skills. Read pictographs. 1. Why learn this skill? Have you ever been asked to compare things? As you know, a graph is a drawing that helps you compare numbers. The graph below compares the amounts of wheat grown in 5 states in the Middle West region. Instead of using numbers, however, this graph uses symbols. A graph that uses symbols to stand for numbers is called a pictograph. A pictograph always has a key that tells you how much each symbol stands for. To read a pictograph, you must use both the key and the symbols. 2. Understand the process. Follow these steps to understand the symbols used on this pictograph. 1. Look at the key. How much does each symbol stand for? 2. Find South Dakota. How many whole symbols are beside it? 3. Figure out how much wheat the whole symbols stand for. Since one symbol stands for 50 million bushels of wheat, how much wheat do the whole symbols together stand for? 4. Find South Dakota again. There is about 4/5 of another symbol. How many bushels of wheat does this stand for? 5. Add the two amounts to figure out about how much wheat is raised altogether. About how much wheat is raised in South Dakota? 3. Think and apply. Find Kansas on the pictograph. About how much wheat is raised there? Think about what you have learned about the interior plains. Why do you think much more wheat is raised in Kansas than in Minnesota? Lesson 2. Focus. How do people sometimes adapt their ways of life to new environments? Main idea. As you read, look for changes people made so they could live on and farm the Great Plains. Vocabulary. Sod. Self-sufficient. Fertilizer. Urbanization. Amber waves of grain. Wheat fields did not always blanket the Great Plains. In fact, early maps labeled this area the Great American Desert. To farm and live there, people had to adapt to the dry, treeless land. New homes in a new land. Mattie Huffman was a young woman when she and her family arrived at their new farm in Kansas in 1875. An old house stood alone on the prairie. Mattie was surprised to find the door locked. What was there for anyone to steal? When Mattie's father turned the key and opened the door, she saw why it had been locked. An iron plow was inside. The plow was very important to their lives. It was needed to till the soil or prepare it for planting. Without the plow, no crops could be planted on the grass-covered prairie. Mattie and her family were lucky to have a house already standing on their farm. Most settlers had to build their own. Many houses, however, were not built with wood. Few trees grew on the Great Plains. In fact, trees were so scarce that the Plains Indians had to go all the way to the Rocky Mountains to get long wooden poles for their shelters. Settlers had to use the building materials that their new environment offered. They had to change the kind of shelter they called home. Instead of using lumber, most settlers built their houses out of sod. Sod is a layer of soil held together by the roots of grasses. It took about an acre of sod to make a one-room soddy, as sod houses were called. To build a soddy, family members first had to cut blocks of sod from the prairie. Each block was about 12 inches, 30 centimeters, square. Then they piled the sod like bricks to form walls. For the wooden doors and window frames, families had to bring lumber with them or do without. Next, family members built the roof of the soddy. Most families built the roof by laying strips of sod over corn stalks or brush. Others brought lumber to build a wooden frame for the roof. Finally, dirt and mud were forced into cracks between the sod blocks. This helped keep wind out of the soddy. Sod houses had some good points. In the summer, they stayed cool like a cave. In the winter, their thick walls kept the houses warm inside. and sod houses did not burn easily. This was important on the prairie, where there were sometimes dangerous grass fires. Soddies had bad points, too. They were damp and dirty, of course. But the biggest problem was creepy, crawly things, such as insects and small animals. One woman wrote, "I remember it. Bugs and snakes and mice were always dropping down from the ceiling. Mama used to hang sheets over the tables and beds so that things wouldn't fall on them." Review. Why did settlers on the Great Plains have to learn new ways of building? A lonely life. Pioneers on the Great Plains had to be brave. To begin their new lives, they had to make a long, hard journey. From cities in the east, it could take 6 weeks just to reach the Great Plains. Think of being 6 weeks away from everything you knew, from everything you grew up with. Think of how lonely you might feel. Many pioneers could not take the lonely life on the prairie and went back home. One saying of the time was, 10 miles to the nearest water, 20 miles to the nearest tree, 30 miles to the nearest house, gone back east to the factory. Farms on the Great Plains were often a long way from a town and stores. Even the closest neighbors could be miles away. Because of this, pioneer families had to be self-sufficient. Self-sufficient means doing almost everything for yourself, with no help from other people. Review. Why did pioneer families need to be self-sufficient? Technology. Preserving food. In the 1800s, most people had to preserve their own foods. Meats were either dried in the sun or smoked over a fire to keep them from spoiling. Fruits and vegetables were kept in glass jars, which had to be sealed and then boiled in water. Other foods were stored in heavy stone jars called crocks. Today, people can buy most foods at grocery stores. Workers in food processing plants preserve the food. Changes come to farming. Farmers on the Great Plains needed a crop that would grow well in a dry climate. They found that crop when Russian Mennonites moved to the Great Plains in the late 1800s. They brought with them a winter wheat that grew well in dry climates. Winter wheat was planted in the fall and harvested the following summer. Growing winter wheat was an important change in farming on the Great Plains. Several inventions from years before had also changed farming. Wheat and other grain crops once had to be cut by hand. Using hand tools, farmers could harvest no more than 2 to 3 acres of wheat each day. Cyrus McCormick changed that. In 1831, he built a machine called a reaper to cut down the plants. Using a reaper, a farmer could harvest as many as 10 acres of wheat each day. Once the plants had been cut down, farmers had to thresh or separate the grain from the stems. In 1834, two brothers, Hiram and John Pitts, built a machine to do that. Threshing machines saved farmers many days of hard work. Iron plows, like the one owned by Matty's family, were not very good at turning over the prairie's thick sod. Teams of oxen had to struggle just to pull the plow through the earth. Iron plows had a rough surface. The soil stuck to it. Every few minutes, the farmers had to stop and clean the plow. In 1837, an American inventor named John Deere made a steel plow. Steel cut through sod better, and the soil did not stick to its smooth surface. Steel plows made tilling the prairie soil much easier, although for a long time they were too expensive for many farmers, like Matty's father, to afford. In 1855, James Oliver of Indiana built another kind of plow that was even better at cutting through the sod of the Great Plains. With reapers, threshers, and improved plows, farmers could plant more land and get bigger harvests. Review. How did new farm machines and improved plows change farming? Changes continue. Farming methods keep changing. Today, most farming is done with large machines. Many farmers add fertilizers to the soil. Fertilizer is matter added to the soil to help crops grow. Some farmers use chemical sprays to fight weeds and insects. Also, scientists have improved many kinds of plants. These improved plants grow faster and produce more food than older kinds. All these changes have improved harvests. Farmers are now able to raise more crops on each acre of land. Individual farmers can plant more land too. Most farms in the United States today are more than 3 times as big as they were in 1900. Many are owned by large businesses. However, fewer people are now farmers. Out of every 100 people in the United States today, fewer than 2 live and work on farms. As people have left farms, urbanization has been happening. Urbanization is the spread of city life. Cities in the United States have grown rapidly. Review. How has the number of people who earn their living on farms changed? Lesson 2 review. Check understanding. 1. Remember the facts. Why did pioneers build cities? 2. Recall the main idea. What changes did people make so they could live on and farm the Great Plains? Think critically. 3. Link to you. What changes might you face if you moved to a new region? Show what you know. Writing activity. Imagine that you are a pioneer living in a soddy on the Great Plains. Write a diary entry describing your life. Critical thinking skills. Identify time patterns. 1. Why learn this skill? Think about all the things you have done since you got out of bed this morning. Also, think about the order in which you did them. You got dressed. You walked or rode to school. You went to your classroom. You sat down in your seat. Most things happen in a certain sequence. A sequence is the order in which one thing comes after another. Looking for the sequence of things will help you understand what you read. 2. Remember what you have read. In Lesson 2, you read about how pioneer families on the Great Plains used sod to build their houses. To build a soddy, the families had to do things in the right sequence. 1. What was the first thing pioneers had to do to build a soddy? 2. Then what did they do? 3. What did they do next? 4. What did they do last? Words like first, then, next, and last tell you about sequence. So do words like past, present, and future. Whenever you see such words in a sentence, you should look for sequence. When things happen over a long time, dates are often used to tell the sequence in which they occurred. Dates give more exact times for when things happened. In Lesson 2, you read about 3 inventions that changed farming on the Great Plains. These inventions were the reaper in 1831, the thresher in 1834, and the steel plow in 1837. From the dates of the inventions, you can tell the sequence in which they were built. 3. Understand the process. Here are some things you can do to identify sequence as you read. Think about the order or sequence in which things happen. Look for words that tell about sequence. Look for dates that tell about sequence. You may find years or just months or days of the week. 4. Think and apply. Think about some things you have done, either today or over a longer time. Then write a paragraph that tells about them. Be sure to use either words or dates to help your readers understand the sequence in which things happened.